And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Terms and restrictions apply.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code The Athletic, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10. Place your first bet on any game and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Hey everybody, Max Boltman here alongside Corey Prondman, back with another episode of the Athletic Hockey Show's Prospect Series. Should be a really fun show today. Corey's individual U23 player rankings are now out. We're obviously going to talk about those. Got resolution on the Kotkaniemi saga with Carolina. We got the Olympics and a really great mailbag that I am excited to get to. But first, Corey, how's it going?
It's going well. I mean, we're kind of ramping up into the start of hockey season right now. I've been watching, because they're the only leagues that are in regular season. Been watching a lot of Russia, KHL, VHL, MHL games right now. And starting to really get an idea of what a travel schedule is going to look like for the upcoming season. Still some lack of clarity on some important things, particularly when it comes to traveling to Canada. But now we have a U18 World Championship host cities. It's going to be not going to be in Munich, but it's going to be Munich adjacent. So that's exciting for next spring, and trying to get an idea of now what we're going to be doing before then. I'm starting to plan some college and some junior trips, and we're going to be off and rolling right now, to be quite honest.
I mean, a week from, certainly by the time this episode is airing, you and I are going to be in Traverse City at the Prospect Tournament watching a lot of these guys that we're talking about today and over the course of the series in action, which really, it does not seem like we're only a week away, and yet I guess I better kick into gear here.
No, trust me. Based on my looking at my Delta and my Marriott app, I can very much tell you we're underway, and I'm actually going to be flying from Traverse City to the Arizona tournament in the middle of that. So I'm going to try and hit two of those to get a good coverage, especially since Traverse City is only five teams this time. And they're not doing the thing where they have staggered games and getting a lot of action in. So I'm definitely going to try and go to two tournaments next week.
My Marriott balance is suffering right now. I was disloyal to the brand, so I'll have to take that up with the Marriott bosses at some point, I guess, or the Marriott gods.
And this is not just a hockey thing. All sports writers, all scouts across all sports, in case listeners don't know, have to stay on Marriott's. It's actually they make you sign a contract when you decide to get into this line of work.
Yeah, so I've been disloyal to the entire profession by booking outside of the loyalty brand, but that's okay. I you mentioned the Arizona tournament. Is that the most stacked of the prospect tournaments that are going to be taking place kind of across the map this year? I mean, there's more popping up, obviously, but that one, I guess, not surprising when you look at some of the teams that are going to be at that tournament. But is that the most stacked prospect lineup that you're going to see this fall?
Yeah, no, for sure. It's why I thought it was a priority to get out there. You have the Kings, Anaheim, San Jose, all with deep farm systems. Arizona starting to build, a deeper farm system. Colorado, contender, but they have some really intriguing young players. That's, you know, a lot of talent there. And there's some guys we're even bringing like some older prospects to that thing too. So I'm really excited for that one. Not that I'm excited for Traverse City, but I'm really excited for that one.
All right. Well, we'll get into some of that a little bit more later on in the show, but I wanted to start off, let's kind of tie the bow on the Sperry-Kotkaniemi saga. Last week, I think both of us said we probably would not match in Montreal's shoes. That is indeed the conclusion that they come to. And they very quickly kind of resolve the whole situation. They trade for Christian Dvorak out of Arizona. Arizona now with an absolute stockpile of picks. We're definitely going to get to that later. But overall, any kind of final thoughts on the Kotkaniemi saga, what it means for Carolina, what it means for Montreal?
Yeah, kind of watching the coverage of this from not from afar, because I know the player and I've written about the player, but in terms of like seeing both the commentary from media and from fans about this, I understand why some would be critical of Kotkaniemi. He hasn't had a tremendous success in the NHL yet in his three seasons he's been up with the Canadiens. But I also think he's still a good player. It's hard to kind of make these disconnects sometimes when guys are in the NHL so early. But, imagine Kotkaniemi was still in Liga right now, or he played SHL or something at the ages of, let's say, 18, 19, 20. After how successful he was as a prospect when he was 17 years old, there would be a lot more excitement, I would imagine, for this player. And we're going to get this when we get to the U23 discussion, talking about like comparing like Moritz Seider to like a guy in the NHL already or something like that. And you have to kind of, the NHL is a really, really hard league to excel in. But I still think when you look at Kotkaniemi, you have a 6'2 forward. I think he could play center, but Carolina's already said he'll start on the wing. But I think they envision him long-term as a center. We'll see what happens, obviously, with guys like Trocheck and those kind of players next summer. And I see he's got great skill. He's got great vision. Competes well enough. Skating's always been an issue. It's still an issue. That's probably why I don't think he'll ever hit the highest echelons of production. But I still think you have those things in that player. I think he could be a good player. I'm not sure he's going to be a great player, but I think he can be a good player. I think he can be a guy who can help Carolina win hockey games and be maybe not one of their best players, but a semi-important piece of a good team, because he was just, in his 20-year-old season. Let's see where he's when he's 21, 22, 23. Those are years where even like good prospects are just then starting to make the NHL. So I think, yes, $6 million, he's overpaid, especially on a second contract, no RBers. Nobody, I don't think anyone in the hockey world is going to dispute they overpaid. That's what they had to do. Otherwise, Montreal would have matched. Like that's how the offer sheet would have to have worked for them to get that player. Like I said, that's kind of where I stand on that one. And we'll see what happens. I think Dvorak is a good player too. You get him for, a little bit older, maybe a little bit closer to free agency. I still think he's a good player. So I'm not sure. Montreal probably feels like they minimize the damages there to some extent. I'm not sure I call them winners because I don't think they really I don't think they love getting bullied out of their third overall pick. But
right.
I think they did a good job minimizing the damages.
Well, you covered a lot of this, so I'll just bring it up from the mailbag right now from Andy Veazey. We would have gotten to this later in the show, but he wants to know kind of what Canes fans can expect, strength and weaknesses, play style and comparables. I think you covered a lot of it just then, but I think kind of the play style and comparables one seems to stick out. And I'm guessing, Carolina here is probably looking at this and saying, if things go well, yes, even without kind of blazing speed, they can probably still get a pretty strong two-way center here that can impact the game in a number of ways.
Yeah, I think, frankly, he plays the game a lot, along the lines of how a lot of the guys they've acquired through the draft the last couple of years with him, with his skill and his hockey sense, being major assets and him, actually having good size. Those are big positives. And, whether he's a, I don't know, I project him to still be a top six forward. There's a margin of error on that, as there always is in projections. Maybe he's a third line forward. Maybe he's just like an okay second line guy. Maybe he really pops and becomes like a fringy first line type of guy too. I think those are all possible. I mean, you could kind of go through some of the centers in the league off the top of my head and think of guys with subpar feet, but great size and skill, and good enough competitiveness, and like it always comes off the top of my head like right away, unfortunately. But yeah, I think he's going to help Carolina, and given his age, I think he'll help them for a while.
All right. The other kind of big news item from the last week that, you know, it wasn't quite out in time for the last show, that would be the NHL going back to the Olympics for 2022. And obviously, when you're talking about the Olympics, you're really mostly talking about more established players. You're talking about veterans, guys who have been kind of deemed to be the very best that their country has to offer. Those are kind of the main player pool that we're talking about. But we could see some guys who, at least right now, certainly are considered in the U23 range, maybe even some prospects in that range. And I would think kind of the main countries for that would be Finland, Russia. I don't know if any of these really, I mean, Pettersson, I think obviously should play a big role for Sweden.
I think Brady Tkachuk's a candidate for the United States too.
Jack Hughes, USA is pretty deep at center now.
Yeah, it depends how his season goes. I think if he starts a little better than he was overall last season, like if he's not just like pretty good, but he's like, you know, if he's really good, like it looks like a legitimate first line center, that may not still be enough to push him over the edge. But if he like looks like a monster in the first half, you're like, oh, there he is. Like that's the guy we've been waiting for, kind of thing. Then doing it consistently over, let's say, a couple of months span. They got to put a long list out by October, I think. But I presume he'll be on the long list. And, you know, if he does it over the first half, then I think he's a guy who definitely can work himself into the mix. But he's going to need to have a strong first half, I think.
What's the difference in how you'll watch the Olympics versus how you watch kind of the world champion? I mean, it's true best on best. Like that is one big difference between kind of the world championships and the Olympics.
Yeah, and at least from a young player perspective, there's not going to be as many options. You know, with the world championships, it's always outside of a couple of countries. For some countries, it's whoever wants to play for us sometimes.
Yeah.
So you do get more young players for some of those nations. Like Russia, though, will usually try to bring their best roster, like as a counterpoint to that. With last Olympic Games was a little different, as you might recall. Like there were some, a lot of European players. Eli Tolvanen from Nashville had a huge tournament at the Olympics. I think Heiskanen was there too, if I recall. Much different vibe to that one as opposed to this one, which is truly best on best. And it will be interesting measuring stick, not just for any prospects that might go or more young players, but I think just for the NHL players too. I think these tournaments tend to form perceptions for a very long period of time. You know, particularly when you're going to start looking like who fits into Canada's like top six or who's going to be like the best defenseman on Team USA. Will Fox emerge? Will McAvoy become the go-to guy? So on and so forth. And I think those opinions, from my experience watching the other best on best Olympics, tend to have very long lasting effects on public perception of those players.
Germany, another team. I mean, obviously you're looking at, Leon Draisaitl, not a prospect anymore, but Moritz Seider there. I mean, I got to think John Jason Paterka and Lucas Reichel, Tim Stützle are getting not just probably long looks here, but could get decent deployment on a German Olympic team.
Yeah, no, for sure. Definitely Stützle and Seider. Reichel and Paterka, I think will be on the teams. Whether they play high roles or not, still to be determined. They'll still both be teenagers. And even though Germany's not one of the high-end nations, they're still good enough, have enough depth there where they may not be the most prominent players on those teams. Slovakia will be an interesting one just because they have two really high-end guys for this year's draft, and Jaroslav Koski and Simon Nemec. They didn't play big roles with them in the Olympic qualifiers. So I don't know whether they will actually, be on the team, but we'll see how their first halves go.
Real quick, give me your medal predictions on the 2022 Olympics without knowing any of the rosters.
the safe money is Canada's for the gold medal. You look at the roster, and they're pretty stacked. I think if Jack Eichel is healthy, USA has a shot at to win gold. I think their team has maybe not the exact kind of forward depth that Canada has, but I'd argue their defenses can go toe to toe with them for sure.
Goaltending right there
may even be better. So yeah, I think if Eichel is healthy and looks like Jack Eichel, then I think they're in the mix. And then there's probably between Sweden and Finland for would be the bronze. I think with Russia, their wingers are amazing, but that center problem is a real problem. Like it's a real problem with Kuznetsov not being available. We were struggling when we were doing our predictions for the article to think of who the centers would be. They have to lean kind of on my KHL knowledge to where I thought Shipachov made sense, but Shipachov couldn't make the NHL. Like, you know, it's I like Shipachov when I watch him in the K, but he's not a good skater, kind of like not overly like physical competitive type, just really high skill IQ. You're looking at Vlad Kamenev, who couldn't stick in the NHL. You know, it's the options are bleak. And I think I'm watching the KHL in the first half now, and we're like wondering, like, okay, who's the guy who might emerge here? I was talking with like Mike Russo a couple of days ago. We were wondering whether like Kuznetsov could be in the mix, although he doesn't even play wing. He doesn't play center in the KHL, even though he's listed. I think he'll play center at the World Juniors. He plays wing in the KHL, so he's not, well, realistically as a teenager, not an option for that high level. But I think they are hoping that somebody emerges in the K in the first half.
The one thing is they do have the best goalie in the world. And I after, honestly, the last couple of years, I'm not sure that it's even all that close. Like, I think Andrei Vasilevskiy is your number one with a bullet goalie in that tournament. And in any short-form tournament, a elite goalie play can put you in position to get on the podium.
Yeah, no, I'm not ruling out Russia. You know, you wouldn't rule out Russia being a medalist. But, yeah, I mean, he's going to need to have the week of his life pretty much too, given the kind of offenses they'll be playing, and given that I think their defense is fine, but it's not amazing.
Looking for an assist with your credit card, but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Okay, now we're going to get into your individual U23 rankings. We covered kind of the team rankings last week on the show, and probably not surprising that there's a big presence from those teams at the very top of this list. But number one, Cale Makar from Colorado. What made Cale Makar the number one overall prospect? I know he's in a tier with Andrei Svechnikov there at tier one, but what made Cale Makar the number one overall U23 player in hockey?
Yeah, I think you kind of look at the things he can do with the puck on his stick. He kind of has every element you want in a top player. The skating is extremely good. The skill and the playmaking are all excellent. You know, he's not like what you think of in terms of like the flashiest 1v1 skill type, but I think the unique plays he can make with the puck as a distributor, when he has the puck, he maintains possession incredibly well. You know, very hard for defenders to get the puck off him due to his skill and his skating. Walks the blue line as well as almost anybody in the National Hockey League for those reasons. He can make plays. He shoots it really well. And, when he was coming up, as a junior and then in college, the knock on him is always as kind of like a slightly undersized player. The defending was never really a huge selling point in his game. And I still don't think it's why you like Cale Makar. You know, I think, you know, you compare him to some of the other premium young defenders, like say like Charlie McAvoy that I mentioned before, like, you know, that he doesn't play like McAvoy does. But I think the defending is good enough considering just how elite the offense is and how good it's not just O-zone offense. It's three-zone offense because of how good the skating is, that he can be great in transition and great inside the offensive zone. That you look at a guy who, as long as he defends just well enough to play the 25 minutes a game that he needs to, he's a driving force of one of the best teams in the National Hockey League.
I thought 2 versus 3 in your rankings was a really interesting kind of, I don't want to call it a battleground, but decision. Svechnikov versus Elias Pettersson. Svechnikov has been a force, but so has Pettersson already. One draft separates the two of them. You land with Svechnikov out ahead. Why?
Yeah, and those are tough discussions, and I know Vancouver fans, as they always are, very passionate group of people. I respect their passion. I kind of knew I was going to hear about that one. And, but I think both of them kind of took a little bit of a step back this season. Neither of them had the years I think you thought both of them would. So it really comes down to a tool projection, really. you know, with Svechnikov, I see a guy who kind of like Makar, but even maybe more than Makar, but less proven track record in the NHL. He has everything you want in a top forward, other than him being a center. I mean, you kind of go through the criteria. Does he have great speed? He does. He has amazing puck skills. He's got really good vision. He's got a really good shot. He's competitive. He's physical. He has good size. There's all the indicators are there to go with the production, to go with him being a go-to player last year on a good team. That makes me think, you know, when he's shown all this at such a young age, that I think the sky's the limit for this guy. I know he hasn't had the huge, huge, huge season, but he's like, what, 2 years removed from being like roughly a point a game too? Like, not maybe not. It wasn't maybe a point a game. I remember him, his 19-year-old year, he was really good. I forgot the exact numbers. But I think all the indicators are there that he's going to have a very long, successful NHL career. And I think all the things you look at with his attributes point to him being an elite NHL player. And I think with Pettersson, you know, there's a little bit more proven track record there. Because it took, like, kind of like Svechnikov took, maybe didn't have the greatest year you hope from him, but he still was an excellent, excellent player. The skill level's among the best in the National Hockey League. Very creative playmaker, elite wrist shot. Probably doesn't have all the dimensions that Svechnikov has in terms of the skating, particularly. And I don't think, you know, the physicality will match up to Svech. But he also, you know, even though he's not like, you know, like this, you know, this bruiser, he's still actually quite, you know, actually a decent size. And it helps him do some things out there, particularly when it comes to puck possession. It's like, it's a marginal thing. Like, you know, that's kind of what that's, it's always funny. When I was reading, like, I didn't read all the comments because I need to maintain sanity. but when the comments I do read, it's always kind of funny when I see people like quibbling over, oh, I can't believe he's over him. It's like, oh, well, you know, if it's 8 versus 9, then, you know, if we worked on a team together, I always say this when I talk to like scout people, you know, we were working together and you said there's no like way in hell we're taking this guy over that guy on a draft list. I'm like, okay, well, I only have like one spot apart. Like, I could compromise on that. Now, if like they looked at my list and said, I think something like way down my list. Like, let's say somebody said like, there's no way like Kaapo Kakko is better than Peyton Krebs. I'd be like, okay, that's an interesting argument. Like, I think it's kind of devoid of reality a little bit, but like, yeah. You know, but like if someone said like, there's no way Cider or whatever, let me think of somebody else around there. Like, there's no way that Caulfield is or Cider are worse than Kakko. I'll be like, yeah, I know, I could buy that. Like, you know, like it's but I think I actually had Cider over Kakko.
And they're all in a tier. You had Cider, Kakko, Caulfield, but they're all in one tier.
Yeah, but that's kind of like the point. Even though like Svech and Pettersson were like ones ahead of each other, I think there's a little bit more projection there for Svech to, you know, make, you know, really, you know, top player in the league. If someone said, well, Pettersson has more skill than him and he has more proven track record, and you know, and there might be a positional thing there, even though Pettersson doesn't always take faceoffs, you know, I would say, okay, no, that's reasonable. You could take Pettersson. Like, I wouldn't stress over that.
Well, so, I mean, this kind of gets into something that was going to be in the mailbag too. I'm going to pull it up right now. Trevor V wants to know about your thought process on how you judge NHL players with a true proven track record versus 18, 19-year-olds who are still kind of 2 to 3 years from even being in the NHL. Is it proven sample versus potential? I think there's really two kind of good example cases for this. And one of them would be the most recent draft, Dylan Genther. You got him in tier 4. You drop down a little bit. I mean, I think it's about 15 spots on the list, but it's a whole tier. Jason Robertson in Dallas. Now, obviously not the exact same kind of player, but I think a good case study for a much more advanced player age-wise versus one fresh out of the draft. What do you look at when you're judging Dylan Genther versus Jason Robertson in two kind of very different resumes?
Yeah, I mean, you know, every evaluation is a balance of those things that the questioner mentioned, which is you're balancing the toolkits, you're balancing what they've done at various levels, be it junior, college, the American League, the National Hockey League, and you look at their ages and you look at what they've proven, particularly whenever a guy proves things versus men, and especially when they prove it at the NHL, they get a lot of bonus points from me in that regard. And you kind of have to just like balance it all. It's all like all of this is what I would call a balancing test. And there's no perfect way to do this. The balancing tests I use in my process have changed a lot, and they continue to change every year almost, as you try to make things just a little bit more closer to reality, and you learn what tends to predict and what doesn't. And so there's no like good answer. Like I can't say, oh, well, if you just have these three things, I'll put you above the proven NHL player. It doesn't work like that. You know, I have like, you know, I look at all the evidence and I say, in my opinion, this projects out to this tier of production. And then if there's guys kind of in a similar tier, I start making like tiebreakers. Tiebreakers could be positional. Tiebreakers could be proven in versus pros. There's other things I can use there, but that's kind of how that goes. But because all these guys are so close, like I said, I could buy an argument where someone says, oh, well, Jason Robertson should be better than Genther. Even though I know I was higher on Genther than a lot of people, he went 9th. I had him 2 on my list. I still do. And, you know, they say, oh, he proved in the NHL, great skill, amazing score wherever he goes, did in the NHL at a huge level. So, yeah, no, I could buy that. But I think Genther, like, is a much better skater, also continues to score really high levels historically, has great skill, you know, fierce competitor, projects as a two-way four in the National Hockey League, who could PK and PP. That's a huge asset in my opinion, and I'd be willing to bet on that even as a teenager, that if you get that guy, you're talking about like a massive piece of a top team. Whereas I think Robertson is a big part of a top team, but I think he needs to be used in a very selective way because of his skating.
I think that makes a lot of sense. I mean, part of what I like about this list is that it does ask those questions, because whenever you have a list that's just prospects, the obvious follow-up is, okay, well, how would these guys slide up against my favorite rookie or my favorite sophomore player? And this just skips that step. Now, with that said...
Yeah, I mean, that's a question I always get usually around the draft. Like, where's this guy compared to this guy or that guy?
Right.
Yeah, you know, so on and so forth.
Now, with that said, the other case study that I wanted to get to on this topic is the two Buffalo defensemen who are both pretty high up, obviously Rasmus Dahlin and this year's first overall pick, Owen Power, both of whom are in your top 10. Miro Heiskanen just outside that top 10 at number 11. Now, he's in the same tier as Power. He's a tier behind Dahlin. I think this is an interesting case because he, you know, Dahlin's one draft year later than him. Mm-hmm. Power obviously one draft year later. Power obviously much later than him. Heiskanen, I would say, Dahlin does have the better scoring season in the NHL of all of them, obviously, but Heiskanen's been a really strong player. Where does Heiskanen fall short of both of these two guys?
And again, by fall short, it's like the margin.
Because
again, if someone said you have to take him over Power, I'd be like, yeah, no, I get it. You know, but by Power, I see, you know, if I was having this argument with a scout actually yesterday about this exact like topic. And I said, you know, just off the top of your head, Max, who would you take, Hedman or Heiskanen?
Hedman.
By a decent margin or by a large margin or by no margin?
Well, I mean, I guess if the game is tomorrow, by a decent margin.
So here's the question. Like, you know, obviously, like, you know, I'm not going to say Power's going to be Hedman. I don't think Power's going to be Hedman. I don't think that's realistic. But let's just say, you know, I see a 6'6 guy who can really skate well for his size and a tremendous offensive hockey sense and has shown a great track record of being a great two-way forward. If I told you I think there's a 50% chance he could be Hedman, you know, how excited are you about that prospect right now?
Extremely.
And I think that's a realistic assessment for Power. Maybe I don't think he's 100% going to be that, but when you have those kind of toolkits, and that's because I think he's 50%, doesn't mean the other 50% is he sucks. It's 50% might be he falls somewhere short of that.
50%, and, like not, I mean, Parayko, I guess, is another big guy. Maybe he's not as physical as Parayko, but.
Yeah, because I guess that's kind of what I'm getting with Power is like I think there is, because of the elite athletic toolkit he has, and because there is offense, not elite offense, but there is offense, you can envision a very realistic outcome where he is one of the very best defensemen in the National Hockey League, where he is a key piece of a championship team like Hedman has been the last 2 years. And I think with Heiskanen, I'm not saying he can't be that. I think he's in the projected All-Star. He's obviously been an All-Star. He was part of Dallas's deep championship run 2 years ago when they just fell short. I just think the toolkits for me, the athletic toolkits are – there's definitely a gap there to Power. Like Heiskanen is an excellent, excellent skater, but so is Power, and he's like 6 inches taller than him. So there is a more of an upside projection there when I think their hockey senses are kind of similar, to be quite honest. I think both of them are extremely smart players. Heiskanen has got a better shot than Power does, and he's the argument then comes down to kind of what we just said before is who's proven it. And obviously, Heiskanen has proven that he's been a true star player in the league for several years. Powers played for a week versus Min, where he was excellent, but that's not anywhere close in the National Hockey League over an extended period of time. So that's the balance. And you can kind of see that argument from both perspectives and lean one way or the other, depending on what you value. And the last one would be Dahlin. Dahlin didn't have a great year last year. Like, nobody's going to sit here and say, oh, he was great. He was exactly as you hoped. He wasn't until the last couple of weeks when there was the coaching change. But I don't think you can just erase the first half because there was a coaching change. I think you look at Dahlin, you look what he's done his entire life, not just last season. You look at his teenage years. You look at his years when he was coming up as a prospect. You look at a guy who is, whatever he is, 6'2", 6'3", can skate well and has unreal skill. Kind of same argument I kind of said before with Ganther and with Power to an extent. There is a very realistic scenario where in 3-4 years from now, you're talking about expecting 70 points out of him in a given season. And yep. Like, not blinking, like, that's insane. And him being an important player of a Buffalo team with Power that are becoming a real interesting threat. Maybe not a cup contender but starting to become like a real playoff team and being the two drivers on those teams and his offense. You're talking about it's hard for me to imagine Dahlin not becoming an elite offensive player in the league. Will he become good enough defensively to be one of the very best defensemen in the league? I think he will. I can't say for sure because of how last year went, but I think when you have his toolkit is just so unique. And that's kind of the thing with him at Power versus Heiskanen. I don't think Heiskanen's toolkit is unique. I think he's just an excellent overall player. Yeah. I think Power and Dahlin's toolkits are really unique where they may not hit, but if they do, you've got like a really like dynamic player that nobody else has. And that's why everybody always chases the Hedmans.
Well, see, what I find myself pulled toward Heiskanen on is obviously I think he's an extremely good defender. He's so smooth. He's so smart. But it's also the fact I watched him put up a point per game
in the playoffs
at the very highest level of any hockey. And it's really hard for me to forget that having seen that and not say, there's no uncertainty for me with Miro Heiskanen at all. Maybe that's me being risk averse. There's so much there.
I would say maybe no uncertainty. That's probably an overstatement, but I get
very minimal.
Yeah, the uncertainty is minimal. I think you look at history and the guys who have Dahlin Powers toolkits, particularly Powers, this sentiment is shared by a lot of NHL people. Like when people would be watching Power, like there's no way this guy isn't a top pair defenseman. There's some people who say that. There's no way.
Yeah.
Whether he's a true like superstar or something like that, time will tell. But when you have his size, his feet, you can defend, you're really smart. Like there isn't a reality where you're not at the minimum a top pair defenseman, and the maximum, is really like the top echelon of the league.
Yeah, and that's the really extraordinary outcome. So, I mean, you're right. It's a dance. It's what have they shown already to show you that the potential is there and that it's going to materialize. But it's also, how high can that potential be? And with Dahlin and Power, like, I can see what you're saying. The ceiling is very, very high.
Yeah, and big part of my job is projection. And I think projecting is you can't like prove it. That's where it becomes difficult to explain to readers sometimes. It's like, yeah. I'm projecting this and I try to explain the best of my ability why. But it's like, it's almost like, trust me, this could happen. And as opposed to what we've already seen, like we have this argument when it comes to like Kako or Jack Hughes or someone like that, or along those lines where it's like, I think Kako was one of the more divisive ones because he hasn't been that good in his 2 years. And I would like kind of make the argument you cover the Red Wings, Seider obviously was amazing in the SHL last year. Imagine if Kako was in the SHL last year, or he was in Liga.
Do you remember Kako in that third period of that Traverse City game and in overtime where he was just so far and away the best player on the ice in that game?
Well, remember him in a 17. We're talking about Seider when he was 19. Remember when Kako was 17? He was a point a game guy in Liga, playing huge minutes, went to the World Championships.
Really good in the World Championships.
Was good at won gold at the World Juniors. Like, he was one of the best players at the World Championships, overall.
Yeah.
I think that's why some people underestimate how big the jump could be from the NHL. And not to make your readers more angry, but there's a scenario where Seider isn't amazing in the NHL in his first season, just because the NHL is a really hard jump. And I think he will be good because he is an excellent prospect. But that's kind of the thing with Kako is you have to definitely look at what happened the last 2 years, and you have to hold it against him to an extent because he wasn't good. But he was a teenager in the NHL for both of those years. And not until he at least at the minimum gets to like 2021 where you're going to start to get like really worried, I think, if he doesn't like pop to at least a reasonable extent. But I think there's just too much skill there, and I think there's like I'm willing to not, you know, crush a guy over his teenage years in the National Hockey League if I've seen it in the past. I know there's a lot of excellent attributes in this game.
Absolutely. And I mean, we'll veer off way too far if we go too far down this road. But, you know, it is a very interesting perception study of how guys are viewed that spend a little longer and don't get to the NHL, but are able to really tear up their... I mean, Jonathan Berggren just had a really excellent age 20 season in the SHL, one of the best age 20 seasons in the SHL in a long time. And yet, a lot of the best guys to come out of Sweden aren't playing their age 20 season in the SHL. They're already in the NHL, right? And so it's a big perception difference for how to understand production and kind of dominance, even just visually in those leagues, when you know the NHL is such a big jump and so many of the guys are getting there quick who are these real Elias Pettersson type game breakers.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's kind of the balance. That's why evaluating the toolkits are so important. You have to understand what translates and what doesn't, and you have to balance it against what you've seen both in a given season and in past seasons. You can't erase the past when you're evaluating players, because especially when young players, because development could be so uncertain at times.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Terms and restrictions apply.
Hey, Fidelity, how can I remember to invest every month?
With the Fidelity app, you can choose a schedule and set up recurring investments in stocks and ETFs.
Oh, that sounds easier than I thought.
You got this.
Yeah, I do. Now, where did I put my keys?
You will find them where you left them.
Investing involves risk, including risk of loss. Fidelity Brokerage Services, LLC, member NYSE, SIPC.
All right, I'm going to move us now into the mailbag. I thought it was a really good sample of mailbag questions this week. So kudos to all of you guys for coming up with some really good, thoughtful ones. And I want to start with Nick D, who says, do you believe that the Ottawa rebuild is over? They've recently said this, and I feel they still have some questions on D and in net. No doubt their forward group is looking promising. Obviously, this comes on the heels of Pierre Dorion getting a contract extension. They seem to feel like they're ready to shift gears. Do you agree?
I think it depends what you mean by shifting gears. I think there is a realistic projection of them for the next season or two where they're not bottom feeders, where they start to turn the corner a little bit and you start seeing some progression from some young players that they elevate into, you know, higher tiers of the league. Maybe a guy like Brady kind of advances to being among the very, very best like wingers in the league, or gets closer to that. A lot of their other young players take some steps. I think that's all very possible. And you start seeing some more optimism in that organization. If you're asking me, do I think they're a playoff team next year? I would say no. Are they a playoff team in 2 years? Maybe, maybe not. I think they're going to, you know, I think Ottawa still has some of the same issues they've always had, which is they're going to be in tough to get premium free agents. And they're going to need those prospects and young NHL players to really hit and do so in large numbers. You know, the rebuild's gone very well. A little, you know, I think the Carlson trade's gone about as well as anybody could have realistically hoped, and probably outside of the realm, you know, the outside of any kind of realistic expectations, to be quite honest. But things are going very well. You know, I've rated their pipeline really high, and I think a lot of those guys are close to either playing the NHL or are already in the NHL. So I think as an Ottawa fan, it's okay to be optimistic, but I also think in terms of what's actually going to happen here, at least what I think is going to happen is, you know, I don't think they're in the playoffs this year, and I think you're hoping within the next couple of years you get to the playoffs, whether that's 2 or 3, maybe even 4. We'll see what happens there. But I think things are getting better, which I think is what you want, even if it may not be everything you want. And you kind of, you know, we got a lot of questions about Ottawa. We got questions about Detroit. We got questions about Arizona. And all of those, you know, I think the theme here, and someone like Buffalo fans who might be listening can feel this reality in is that rebuilds are hard and they take a lot of time. And you need a lot of things to go right. You need those top guys to hit. You need some of those second or third round guys to become really important NHL players. And you know, you're going against the odds in a lot of those cases, and that's why, you know, when you look at the approaches that both all of Ottawa, Detroit, and Arizona have taken, is they understand, management understands this, that not every draft pick is going to work, not every first round pick is going to work, and you need to have a lot of those options. I think I remember something that Yzerman said after they traded up for Kosa that I thought rang true from people I talked to in the league, and also rang true to me just from watching prospects. He said he hated trading up for Kosa, not because he didn't love Kosa, but because he hated giving up picks, because he knows any one of those could be the lottery ticket that gets you an impact guy, could be your brain point or something like that. And I think all these organizations realize that's why you get so many of these picks, not just to have the deepest farm systems and get the highest pipeline rankings from myself. It's because you need to, you know, you need to keep doing that because the odds are so long on any one of those picks becoming truly impactful players, as I like the premium picks, that you need to keep doing it over and over again. So I like the direction all those organizations are taking, be it Ottawa, Detroit, Arizona, different timelines. Arizona's kind of right at the inception of the rebuild. You're talking about, you know, 3, 5, 7, 8 years probably of pain ahead to, you know, they have some pieces there, but they seem to be trading away all the pieces. So, you know, we'll see where they are in a year or two from now, whether a guy like Chychrun stays or goes, for example. You know, does Keller stay? I think those are open questions right now after they traded Dvorak. But, you know, for organizations like Detroit or Ottawa, you know, there's a path to being in the playoffs in 5 years. But is there a path to being in the playoffs next year or even in 2 years? A lot would need to go right. You know, you look at like the organizations that have rebuilt quickly and like things go right for them in absolute, you know, hilarious amounts. Like
they even go really right. You win two lotteries like the Rangers and move up that fast. I think the Rangers could be in the playoffs this year, had a really short rebuild, but like that's a big break.
And the Rangers get like Adam Fox. And,
yes.
You know,
for free, basically. Yeah, now they get like third round pick.
But. Yeah. But you know what I'm saying? You know, there's a lot of things, you know, they get Panarin walks them because they're a premium market. You know, we envision that Detroit would be able to do that, but when they're ready to win. But a lot of things need to go right. Like you even look at Tampa. Like I think Tampa was built, you know, brilliantly. You know, so many things went right there, but not everything went right there. You know, you look at those.
They missed on a lot of first round picks there. Brett Connolly, Tony D'Angelo. These guys are NHL players, but they're not
Slater
picks. Slater Cuckoo
in the top 10, Drouin in third overall. Which they found a way to turn to Sergachev, but it's not easy to draft. You know, mistake. And every manager, every director of scouting knows they're not like invincible. They know that they're going to have their screw ups, and they hope that they get a long enough sample size to hope that evens out.
Here was my thing on the rebuild is over comment, is that like I don't want to give up the game too much here. I love what Ottawa has done. I actually think it is plausible that they have the vast majority of the pieces that are going to be their core on the next playoff team already in the system. And so in the sense of like the mindset of rebuilding, that's not their mindset anymore.
They got their top five guys. They got Stutzla.
Yes, they got Sanderson.
Brady and Sanderson. But, you know, just kind of like I said, you know, if one of those three don't hit.
Yeah.
They're screwed.
And also, like, just don't say. This is the trick. Just don't say it. When you're a playoff team, no one's going to ask you whether the rebuild is still going. And when you're not a playoff team and you've said that you're not rebuilding, now the really intense scrutiny comes. So I think it was a bit of an unforced error to say this because I don't think they're making the playoffs this year. And now what do you tell people when you don't make the playoffs and you've said that you're not rebuilding, whereas everyone would have assumed you were still rebuilding otherwise? Like, I think that was an unforced error.
Yeah, it's fine though. I think
it is fine, but
I think everyone won't forget about that. I think it was just I understand as an excitement of signing your GM to an extension, and And I get that, and I think they should be optimistic about the direction their organization is taking and their young players. But yeah.
I really like where they're at. It has nothing to do with what they've done, because I think they've exceeded what I maybe draft per draft would have expected them getting out of it. Like I'm one of the big Jake Sanderson believers out there. I think I got a mailbag question for Red Wings mailbag a few weeks ago that asked me, you know, what prospect, if I could, I would steal for the Red Wings if I was the Red Wings GM. I took Quinton Byfield, but I really considered Jake Sanderson because I just think that's such an important piece and style of play that he has. Big believer. I love where Ottawa's at. I just wouldn't have said it's over.
Yeah, I mean, he plays the game a lot like how McDonagh plays. Like,
exactly.
And McDonagh was a huge component of the last two Stanley Cup champions. So, you know, it's a perfectly fair thing to say. And we'll see where Ottawa goes in a couple of years, see where Detroit goes in a couple of years. I think Arizona and Buffalo have a longer path, just because of where they are currently with their roster. But I think that's just kind of the common theme that I'm just kind of like trying to say is like this, that just rebuilds are painful. And that's why I don't think you ever want to intentionally rebuild unless it's like the absolute last option. Because I had one executive tell me to me perfectly, I'll kind of sum it up with this. It's really easy to get bad. It's much harder to get good.
Yep. That's a great way to put it. You mentioned Arizona. This is not in the mailbag, and I don't want to take too much time steering off into it, but just looking at the pick collection that they now have for the next few years is hilarious. I mean, in next year's draft, 8 picks in the first 2 rounds. What is the precedent for this? How should Arizona fans kind of be looking at the opportunity here, especially given, you know, the Colorado pick we expect to be very late. The Montreal pick, we don't know where that's going to – that could very well be in the teens.
Right, and I think there was a caveat, I think, in that they get the best of the Carolina or Montreal first-round pick.
I thought it was the worst of the two.
I think it's the best, unless it's a top 10, but both top 10, then they get the worst.
That is what it is.
That is a stipulation. So, you know, they have a lot of capital, and it doesn't mean, you know, I deal with this every year with our writers, that, like, you know, I presume you're always going to make the picks until they actually trade them. So I would presume they're actually going to use every single one of those draft picks in the 22 draft. But they are assets, and now that you have all these assets, they could be used in creative ways. You know, they could be used to acquire younger players. They could be used to acquire higher or low or more picks, depending on your particular strategy in a given draft. They could be used to acquire maybe more high picks in the following draft if you're looking at really a long-term horizon and you don't want to bunch up your reserve list with a bunch of guys in the same age group. Those are all reasonable approaches to take, but they have assets, and it's not only about the assets. Like, yes, they're going to have a lot of picks in this draft. It's just, you know, it just is. And it's going to be fun to watch for Arizona Coyotes fans. But now it's about a direction. And the direction is, we didn't like our core. We need a new core. And that's the direction they're taking. I think some of their past first round picks, Victor Sjostrom, Barrett Hayden, can definitely be part of that. They have some other decent young players in the organization, but they definitely took a direction that, you know, with Dylan Genther and whoever they're going to pick first, you know, in the first round this year, I think we all kind of expect them to be toward the bottom of the standings this year. You know, they're clearly taking a direction that we need more premium young players. And I'll be curious to see how that rebuild goes and whether I think everybody there is ready for the pain that's about to come, because it's going to be a lot of pain. It's just a reality of how rebuilds go.
This is kind of a natural follow-up from DMART. He says, Red Wings only have 4 prospects in your top 100 under 23, none in the top 10. With that in mind, when do you see them as a playoff team or a cup contender?
Yeah, I think we just kind of answered that. So I'm not going to go too much into what we just said over and over again. I think kind of, you know, you cover the Wings. They're missing the big guys. They're missing the stars. And maybe Sider is one. Maybe Raymond is one. Maybe Evanson. Maybe Kosa. A lot of maybes. I think Sider is most likely, just given what he's shown so far as a prospect. But it's still a maybe because he hasn't done it yet. And you could be as bad as you want. He's only got a 25% chance to draft Shane Wright or Connor Bedard or maybe if you love Michkov that much, maybe a little bit better chance in that draft, but still not great odds.
Then you wait for him, right?
For three years.
That's the timeline, yeah.
Yeah. We don't need stars to be a bubble playoff team. You need good players, but you don't need, like, superstars. I can see somewhere in the next 4 or 5 years. I think you'll start to inch them up. And I kind of said, I think given Eiserman's the GM and given it's Detroit, I think they will be able to attract some free agents that when they are ready to turn the corner, whether it's in college or Europe or National Hockey League free agents, I think they'll be able to supplement the core, the young core there with enough to may not be a top team, but at least be a bubble playoff team, whether it's again somewhere between the next 3-5 years, I would say.
Yeah, my gut was going to be 3, but I'd add a caveat, which is that while the mindset in Ottawa now may be shifting to we're not kind of trading away guys anymore, like I'm not 100% sure that'll be the case in Detroit. And if you trade one of Tyler Bertuzzi or Jacob Vrana, guys like that, every one of those guys you subtract, like it's really hard to find another top six forward to get you there to the playoffs. And so if they are done subtracting, which I am not convinced is the case, then I think it could be as early as 3. But I'm not convinced that they're done subtracting. Yeah. And some of those guys all of those guys have contracts that are done within the next 3 years. And that leaves even more mystery, even beyond how the prospects develop.
My time watching teams rebuild is always bet against the rebuild. Columbus has been rebuilding as long as I've been writing about hockey. It's just tough. And building up a good team takes a long time.
And their window was so short, even when like they had a couple years where I think you could say that the rebuild was not in effect, but it was really short. It was 2-3 years.
That's kind of why it meant that I thought they've been rebuilding for as long as I can remember. Yes, I know they made the playoffs a couple of times, but as a low seed, and they weren't rebuilding when they had Panarin and Bobrovsky on those teams. And even the year,
they went all in and traded for Duchesne and all that.
I'm not trying to pick on Columbus. I'm just trying to point out especially for like a team like Ottawa or Arizona, where you can't attract the premium free agents, it's just so tough. And, you know, so when those good years come, really enjoy it.
All right. Ethan H., how difficult is it when scouting to balance the known information about a player's on-ice capabilities with the far more unknown information about off-ice habits and character? Tons of highly talented players bust because of off-ice problems not foreseen by their professional organizations. So as a scout, what ways do you kind of bridge that gap between what's on tape and what is not?
I joke with some people who are scouts sometimes that they're talent evaluated, but they're also like psychologists, and they're like they do like the job of an HR person sometimes because they got to interview kids, and then they got to like break down whether they're like they have the mentality for it or not. And it's an interesting, it's something that I don't have great answers to, and you try the best. Like you hear things all the time, like, oh, this guy's a good kid, or like he doesn't have, like, you know, they tell them like something about the kid for X and Y reason or something along those lines you always hear. And I don't know what's true and what's not true. For me, I always look for like the glaring red flags, like the things I didn't like how he treated this coach once. Like, no, that's not what I look for. Like I'm looking for something like slaps you in the face, not like Logan Mayu level, because that one's like really obvious, but like,
yeah.
but guy gets suspended, or you know he has like some real off ice issue that's become like really glaring and you can't avoid stuff like that, where you can tell it's transcending just like the rumor mongering aspect of the off ice stuff, and it's something that's really substantive and it should be a critical part of your evaluation. It's all important. Every team does character and background. Every team does multiple interviews usually of the guys they want to draft. In-person interviews back in the day, now so more by Zoom. You'll have area guys do it. They'll have the directors interview the guys, all kinds of ways. You know, they'll talk to the Billet families. They'll talk to the coaches. They do all kinds of, they'll talk to their teammates. They'll do all kinds of homework to try and figure out who these guys are. Doesn't mean they understand everything about that aspect, just like you make errors in evaluating the talent level of players. But we all try and make our best effort, at least at getting a bare minimum understanding, particularly of the top guys. Like particularly in my job, you know, I cover like thousands of guys. Like you can't know the character of every single guy, but the top guys, you try to at least get a good idea about.
All right, Will A wants to talk about the 2023 draft. He wants to know, it seems to be stacked with Mishkov and Bedard, but how far behind is Adam Fantilli behind them? It's far away, but does he project to be an impact NHL player at this point?
Yeah, kind of what you said. It's far away. You're 2 years away. And, you know, I love all three of those players. I think if you asked me to do a 2023 ranking, they're the top three guys. I also would tell you I don't know who the other guys are yet, or at least confidently enough to tell you that they're for sure going to be the top three guys come 2 years from now. a lot changes over the course of 2 years. And I think they seem pretty, locked up there at the top of the draft, and maybe one of them slips to four. Maybe there's some guy we don't really know a whole lot about that really rises in that time period. They're different players. Like, I think Michkov and Bedard are the elite skill IQ scoring types, where they both have fantastic hands, ridiculously good hockey sense, both have great shots, both are kind of undersized, they're both good, not great skaters, but they're competitive, whereas Fantilli is more like the modern, premium athlete type, big, really good skater with the skill and the shot, but doesn't have like the dimensional like playmaking ability or offensive creativity that those two guys have. So he's different in that sense. I would prefer Michkov and Bedard right now, just off the top of my head, but a lot changes in 2 years. And, there's a reality where 2 years from now, Fantilli just won the Hobie Baker and in his draft year at Michigan, and he's the most unreal prospect you've ever seen, and he's number one overall, and we're not even thinking twice about it, but maybe not. We'll see what happens over the next 2 years. All three of those guys have enough flaws to where I could really pick them apart and think of their worst case scenarios, even though they all have massive strengths and are all very special prospects.
Charger Jay, if you're Chris Drury, are you trading for Jack Eichel or letting the kids develop and, in my opinion, continue the path of rebuilding the correct way? That's Charger Jay saying that, not me. We haven't heard Jack Eichel's name in a while here. I guess this is more from the Rangers' perspective, but
yeah. I'm sure Jack Eichel will be hearing Jack Eichel's name more often.
Yes, I would think so.
I was talking about something the other day. Like, do you think there's a possibility he just stays in Buffalo?
Is it possible that Buffalo is going to really hold and not give for less than their price? Yes. It's really, really hard for me to imagine another game in Buffalo, but I could be wrong. I mean, how does the saga resolved with his neck without a trade?
Can they not just all go like kumbaya and just find a way to work out their differences kind of thing? Like, we have all kinds of mediations for people to dispute. Can there not be like a mediation between like a player and a manager and an ownership group to just be like, find a middle ground.
Yes.
Something like that.
Yes, it could happen, but I don't see how does the neck thing get resolved for him to play another game?
And that's kind of why he probably hasn't been traded yet. It's a combination of he didn't play well last year.
Yeah.
He has this really, big medical question, and they want a ton in return, And, I think if he's healthy, which is a huge if, a big glaring if he's healthy, and he's the Jack Eichel of old. You get whatever prospects you have, you move those guys. This guy is a game breaker. I love Jack Eichel. He has every attribute you want in a top NHL centerman. He would be a real, he takes the Rangers from where they are right now, which is like a bubble-ish playoff team, to, being a really, important, team in the league. In terms of like one of the, the real, maybe not the top team, but on the rise, top 10, top 8, whatever it is. He could be a difference maker, particularly when they're, obviously, as they well know, they're glaring need a center. So it's not like glaring, but somebody to back up Zibanejad for sure, I would, whether it's like Braden Schneider, Nils Lundqvist, Zach Jones, Brandon Othman, whoever, those guys can go for Jack Eichel, and I love all of those guys. I think they're all great prospects. But Jack, you look at teams that win championships, they don't have Zach Jones and Braden Schneiders. The key to them is having Jack Eichel. So, or something similar. So even though he has paid a lot of money for a long period of time, and the medical thing is a big question, that's why, again, a bunch of hypotheticals. And I don't envy the managers trying to figure this out, both from the trading partners and actual Buffalo, because this seems rather complicated and I don't really know how it gets resolved.
It would be fascinating if to see Jack Eichel playing in Buffalo this season at some point. I mean, I don't know what it would take for it to get to that point.
Maybe I'm naive. I just feel like, unless he really doesn't want to play in Buffalo because they've lost so much, and they look like they're going to lose a lot more because they just traded Reinhardt and Ristolainen. So I think it's reasonable you've gone out in that regard. I think if it's just like a dispute over like the health stuff and lack of trust, I feel like you can resolve that as like human beings. But if it's the direction of the team where, realistically, they're going to be really bad next year and be bad for several years, then I understand why he'd want out. But this medical thing looks like it seems like a big part of why this is being held up.
I really pushed back on people the night of the Pierre-Luc Dubois, the infamous Pierre-Luc Dubois shift in Columbus last season, as everyone was writing him out of town. I really pushed back and was like, oh, I don't think this is the end in Columbus. And of course, like 24 hours later, he was traded. So I'm going to err on the side of pessimism now from now on in these matters.
No, I think that's fair. The Dubois stuff, I don't know. I think that was part of the coaching staff.
It was. Yeah. All right. JP Claremont, since the whole Kotkaniemi drama, I was curious about something. Do you see good return on investment with teams that drafted centers who were considered a reach for their ranks, let's say according to your evaluation? So he's saying players like Kotkaniemi, Barrett Hayton, Ty Dellandrea come to mind. I personally would throw in like a Pierre-Luc Dubois in there on the more positive side of the trade here. But overall, I mean, I think this is a really good question. We see people, quote unquote, reach down kind of the overall rankings to get a center in drafts. And I think people would argue maybe Mason McTavish was that in this most recent draft for Anaheim. And I think sometimes we're able to kind of justify it with, well, look, he's a center. Centers are hard to find. This is a great question. What's the ROI on those decisions 3, 4, 5 years out?
Yeah, and I think that's a great debate that happens in NHL front offices every season, because you know, I'll have these discussions, but I'll make a player list and I'll say like, oh, I think this guy projects at this production level in the NHL, and I'll get, you know, whether it's an AGM or a GM come back at me and say, like, listen, Corey, I can get a winger for like anything nowadays. Like, if I want a winger, I can go trade a first round pick. I get a premium winger. You know, he's on my team tomorrow. If I want a premium center, like they're just not out there. Unless you want to like give up like massive amounts of young capital to get that kind of guy. So I understand where that argument comes from, that getting the guys who play down the middle for organizations just seems like an insurmountable thing to do at times. I mean, you can't even look at like, you know, you look at this draft, like the draft that has happened, there was, Beniers and McTavish went right away. And I don't even think anybody in the NHL is telling you that Beniers and McTavish are going to be like superstar centers or something like that. They think they can be really good top two line centers, and thus they went really high. You look at this upcoming draft. We think Shane Wright's the number one pick. He's a center. That one's taken care of. After that, becomes less clear. I could talk to people who don't, I think Lambert and Savoy have played centers at times in their lives, and Savoy more recently. But I talked to scouts who are not convinced either of them will be NHL centers.
We saw Lambert playing on the wing at the Junior Summer Showcase for Finland.
I think at the U18 Worlds, he was on a wing too.
Yeah.
I think you can look at, Savoy because of his skating. Some scouts would be concerned about him being a center. You look at Logan Cooley, and, he might be an NHL center, but because of his size, maybe he gets pushed to the wing. Maybe not. You're already looking at the quote-unquote top options and picking them apart a little bit now and be like, oh, there's not a lot of centers in this one either. That's where it gets really tough at times with trying to find that premium center at the top of the draft. And so I kind of understand when it happens that way. It's hard for me to say the exact ROI over a very long period of time. There were times I really believed in Kotkaniemi and Hayton as players, as high picks, not, the exact,
Well, it's early too. Still early.
Yeah, exactly. We'll see what happens with their careers, obviously. My list don't always reflect that. I do like tiebreakers. If it's between the center and the winger, I take the center. But I know NHL organizations should take much more drastic approaches. It's not a tiebreaker. It's like a clear differentiator. If you're a center and you're even like somewhat close to the winger, it's the center and it's not even a discussion for some NHL people. Like that's just the way they view the value spectrum, is that wingers are easily replaceable. And the trade market, they would argue, reflects that.
All right. Next one is from Matt, and he says, why do you hate Evan Bouchard? I guess I'll ask you, do you hate Evan Bouchard?
I don't hate Evan Bouchard. He seems like a nice guy. and he's a good hockey player. I guess, going back to...
Why are you down on him as a prospect? I think is kind of the question.
I understand what you're going to get there. And I don't think I'm down on him. I think I have him I think he's a very good prospect. I think he's a guy who could be a potential second pair defense in the National Hockey League. I understand where this is coming from because, I think there is an expectation that, what was he, the 11th overall pick, 10th overall pick, 12th overall pick, something around there, into the 2018 draft. And he obviously was an excellent junior player, you know, had huge statistical seasons with London. I was never, I think, right where I thought the hype was with him. I was always like a little bit below, not dramatically below. I think since he turned pro, he's kind of been up and down through his years in Bakersfield, with his 1 year in Bakersfield. And then I watched his first half there in Sweden. And I watched his limited ice time in the NHL last season. And I think his puck moving is excellent. I think his shot is very good. I think the concern on Bouchard is with his so-so skating. How good is he actually going to be if the offense isn't like truly standout level? And given that he hasn't really taken a big leap yet versus men, I know Oilers fans will argue he didn't get opportunity last season. I tend to, you know, be skeptical of those arguments usually. I tend to think most coaches will play players if they're going to help their team. But that's just, you know, I could be wrong about that in individual cases, but I do like Evan Bouchard, but I think this season's a huge one. He's kind of got to kind of prove that he can, you know, be, you know, that the offense is really going to stand out in a significant way in the National Hockey League. And if he does that, then I can elevate his stock and be like, hey, listen, he's not getting run over defensively. The skating's not shown to be that big an issue at the NHL level. He's moving the puck really well. He's helping their power play. Like, there are things he can do, to overcome my current evaluation of him and maybe elevate more into like a clear top four guy, maybe even a fringe top pair type of guy because of the offense and particularly the offensive hockey sense, I think is really excellent. But given how the last, I would say, 2 years have gone, I'm a little bit below that level for him right now, even though I still think he'll be a good pro.
Tough situation for him to break into, too, with a team that's really trying to make the playoffs. They have a kind of clear-cut power play quarterback with Darnell Nurse. Like, it has been a tougher situation.
But, like, Nurse is, like, not like an elite offensive. I know he put up sure. numbers last year, but, like, I feel like if you're, like, a 21-year-old, which he was last year, like, I don't think it's unfair to say, like, if you're, like, truly, like, an elite player, which I don't think he is, and I don't think realistically any scout I talk to will say he's an elite prospect right now. You know, I think it's fair to say you should be playing. I don't think even the Oilers fans are telling me he's an elite prospect. They're probably putting words in their mouth. I think if you're just even like, you know, a true top prospect, if you're like 21 on a, you know, good, not great team with the blue line that I don't think was like amazing. It's not like this was like, you know, Tampa Bay's blue line or something like that. You know, that it's fair to say that he probably should have found a way to push his way into more regular minutes.
All right. Namdanan says Genther or Miroshnichenko?
That's a great question. I was just watching Miroshnichenko today. He just played his first game of the season. He scored, and he had a couple of preseason games that was going through. And I was actually thinking about that while I was watching. I wanted to put that question in, even though it's kind of like, you know, very narrow question. I actually was just thinking about that today and talking to somebody else about that today. That I look at these guys with roughly similar frames. They're both good, not great skaters. They're both really skilled. It's not elite skill. They both have great compete levels. They both have big shots, both right shot, right wings. I see a lot of similarities between them, actually. And, you know, I have Miroshnichenko as my number two prospect in the draft. Currently, I won't put out a new list probably for another month and a half. We'll see where he is by then. But I had Genther number two as well. And I just see those two playing games that translate to the pros really well. And I see quite a lot of similarities other than the nationalities, to be quite honest. And that I think if Miroshnichenko does it versus men, it'd be a little bit more persuasive argument.
And then the last one for today from Tim Wills, your thoughts on Phil Tomasino's AHL season and how he projects to the NHL.
I think Tomasino's season was excellent. I mean, it's hard to argue against that. He put up huge numbers for a teenager. And like the argument against Tomasino was never the talent. He always had great skating. He had great skill, individual and playmaking ability. He could score. The question on him as a junior was, can he be consistent enough with his effort? Will the way he plays, where he could be a little soft physically sometimes, translate versus men? And he showed it this year. He's like, hey, I play versus men. I'm a teenager. I'm making a difference here. Then, you know, his world juniors, I thought the inconsistency should have been a little bit more there that you kind of expected, but you know, it's a balance of all the information as we kind of talked about earlier in the episode. So, you know, if he plays again versus pros next season and does really well, whether it's in the American League or the National League, I think you'll be able to say, hey, listen, the reasons why he went to the 20s, the worries about his inconsistencies, his physicality, you know, that was all nonsense. Like this guy's a stud. And maybe we get there in a year, maybe we don't.
All right, that is going to do it for us. Thank you for listening to this episode of the Athletic Hockey Show's Prospect Series. Please also follow the Athletic Hockey Show on your favorite podcast platform and leave a rating and review if you're enjoying the show. That really helps us out. Make sure you listen to a special episode of the Athletic Hockey Show out now featuring Wayne Gretzky, who remembers the late Ace Bailey on the 20th anniversary of September 11. Subscribe to the Athletic Audio Plus on Apple Podcasts to get all the bonus content from our entire network. Start with a 30-day free trial, and then it's just 99 cents a month after that. And right now, you can save 50% on an annual subscription to The Athletic when you visit theathletic.com/hockeyshow.